Hi, welcome to Ryan Talks Tax, a podcast to keep you up to date on all the latest developments in Canadian tax and government funding. I'm Jim Day. In our last two episodes, we covered some of the key tax change and government funding announcements included in this year's provincial budgets. And today, we're going to do the same for the 2023 federal budget. To help us break it down, we're joined by a couple of returning guests, Jeff Shaw, Director of Client Support Services for Ryan. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Jim.
As well as Brian Cardinal, a principal in our Scientific Research and Experimental Development Tax Credit Group. Hi, Brian. How are you doing?
I'm great, Jim.
And we're also joined by a first-time guest on the podcast, Jeff Dumart, who's a Director of Client Services for Government Funding for MentorWorks, a Ryan company that specializes in Canadian government funding. Hi, Jeff. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Jim.
So before we dive into some of the major highlights from this year's budget, what were your general impressions? I mean, it seemed to me like a lot of spending, but maybe not as much as some people feared. Any thoughts? How about you, Jeff? Jeff, number one.
From a commodity tax standpoint, I mean, pretty quiet. It's been pretty quiet for a number of years. I don't think we were really expecting all that much, although there were a couple of interesting things where I guess we weren't expecting it, but we were hoping that the government would deal with a few issues, and they did. So it was good from that standpoint, but all in all, pretty quiet. And I'm a little concerned that there's some things that they've announced in past years that just keep seeming to hang on and on and on and not get dealt with. So that's a little worrisome.
Yeah, I noticed that too, that it seemed like a lot of outstanding measures from previous budgets still sitting there. Governments indicating they intend to move forward, but we see that year after year. And I think we're going all the way back to like 2016 now. So definitely a real good point there. That is a concern. How about Jeff, number two? What was your take?
Yeah, I see a trending factor towards clean initiatives. So really a lot of money going towards clean energy, clean technologies. It seems to be a trending factor throughout this entire budget I saw.
Yeah, definitely a lot of clean tech type programs and a lot of environmental type initiatives. Brian, how about you? Any comments?
Yeah, I just echo your comments about things on hold or progressing slowly on the shred front. Basically, they could have rewashed the budget from 2 years ago. It was looking at the program and more to come. Talk a little bit about that a little bit later. And again, what Jeff Dumart was saying, lots of tax credits for adoption of clean tech. So whether it's hydrogen, electricity, and whatnot, and a few interesting tidbits in there that we'll get into a bit. But other than that, it was, pretty quiet budget.
Okay, well, let's get into some of those tax changes. We'll circle back to income tax. Maybe we'll start with commodity tax. Jeff, I mean, what jumped out at you? I know you said it was a little bit quiet on the sales tax side, but were there any measures that people should take note of?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's not going to have a large impact, but there was a court case that was decided in 2021 that kind of threw credit card processing services into turmoil. The court case found that credit card processing services were exempt, and that was quite a differing situation than we were all led to believe for a number of years, where it was pretty well known that those services were taxable, and so the court case came out, and the government was really silent on it. So we were all wondering what was going to happen, and so in this budget, they clarified their position and said that no, these services are definitely going to be taxable. I guess we have to wait to see it to be passed and all that sort of thing. But as of March 28th, 2023, those services are going to be taxable. There's some transitional rules in there too that could actually make it retroactive if tax wasn't charged on those services. So that could be a little bit complicated. Now, keep in mind, that's really only going to impact banks and credit card companies and not the average taxpayer. But if it had remained exempt, there could have been some trickle down impacts that might have worked its way through and created some problems. So I'm just surprised at how long it took for there to be something done on that. But I guess at the end of the day, we're going to get to be where we expected and should be.
Yeah, I remember that case. It was a surprising decision. I think that's one where the Tax Court of Canada had originally agreed, with finance and CRA. And then Federal Court of Appeal overturned it, which caught everybody by surprise. So I guess if you don't like how the court's interpreting the rules, you could always just change the rules, right?
Yeah, it was a
long wait, but that's basically what happened here.
Yep.
Really interesting. Yeah.
It's just interesting what's going to happen to that intermediary period where, you know, we were kind of caught in limbo. And I know they got the transitional rule in there, but I'm not 100% sure what the processors were doing during that time. But, you know, you could have a combination of taxable and exempt in there. And that's just going to be really confusing.
Yeah. And I think, isn't that decision kind of at odds with how similar fees are going to be treated, like for somebody using their credit card, say at a grocery store or Home Depot or something like that?
Yeah. Interestingly, as I was analyzing the budget, it was released. Doesn't the Canada Revenue Agency throw out an email saying, hey, we've issued this info statement on how GST applies to credit card surcharges? Again, stemming from a lawsuit. Now, this one wasn't between taxpayers and the CRA or the minister. This was actually a lawsuit between small businesses and Visa and MasterCard, dealing with the high credit card fees. They actually settled it out of court, and it was decided that merchants could decide to levy a credit card surcharge if the customer wanted to use their credit card to pay for it. And under these rules, the merchant had to let the credit card company know that they were going to go this way. And before the purchaser used the credit card, they are supposed to inform the customer that there would be a fee to use the card. So in theory, the customer can opt out of using the credit card and pay by cash or some other method, or maybe Bitcoin. So we were kind of left there wondering, you know, is that surcharge taxable? And you know, I think a lot of us felt that in that particular case, because at the end of the day, it was a fee paid to obtain goods or services which were taxable, that fee would be considered to be additional consideration for whatever you were buying and would be taxable. But this info sheet came out and said, no, because the customer is notified up front that there'll be a fee, and they have the option to opt out, the CRA is considering that credit card surcharge would be an exempt service, which flies in the face of what finance did with other credit card company charges. So I think we got a little bit of inconsistency. And I'm wondering if what happened there is, you know, it's the Department of Finance that sets the rules or sets the legislation. It's the Canada Revenue Agency that then reads those rules and interprets them. And I'm wondering if they didn't necessarily have advanced warning on where we were going with the credit card processing services, and they're just making a decision on the surcharge. And their decision was more in line with what the court had said, because it just doesn't make sense that we'd have essentially the same type of fee, one taxable and one not taxable. I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too much into that, but it is odd that we're going to have two different positions, and that could lead to some confusion in the marketplace.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, to sum up, you're saying essentially fees for credit card processing are taxable when they're paid by a bank or someone like that. But if a consumer has to pay one at their local store, now it's going to be exempt. So I agree. Definitely some chance for confusion there. What else from the budget, you know, jumped out at you?
Well, I think, you know, there had been a lot of news about the fact that after the budget, the price of alcohol was going to go skyrocketing. And that's because there's built-in increases pegged to the rate of inflation. But there was a little bit of good news, if you're a drinker, I guess, that they capped the increase to 2%, whereas the inflation rate was going to indicate an increase of approximately 6%. So we're going to have to pay more for alcohol, just not as more as maybe we expected. So I think that's some good news. You know, it wasn't all good news. If you like to travel and travel by air and like to get through the airport quickly and without much hassle, well, hopefully that will, we'll see some improvements there starting, well, hopefully soon, but more likely maybe in 2024, because they're going to increase the air traveler's security charge by a whopping 32.85%. So that's a big jump. I think they've recognized, you know, over the past year, particularly last summer, there were huge problems at the airport, a lot of it attributable to problems at security. And I think they've realized that they need to throw some money at that. And how are they going to fund it? Well, they're going to fund it through this increased charge. And so we're not going to see that those charges until we pay for airfare that occurs after May 1st, 2024, and you pay for it after that time as well. So we may see a little uptick in the price of a ticket, but those fares or those the charges are not overly high. You know, a domestic one-way flight's $9.94 on May 21st. So, you know, it's not a huge amount, even though it's a huge rate increase.
That's a significant increase, you know, for a tax like that. And it's one that your average consumer is not going to see. So I think that's a really good point, Jeff.
Yep. What else do we have? Well, we had that one issue, you know, we talked about it carrying over for since 2016. I don't know why it doesn't get dealt with, because I don't think it's that complicated an issue, but they've been talking about expanding the use of the joint venture rules and elections since 2016 to more organizations, and it just never seems to get done. So I don't know why there's a big delay there. It seems to me to be a relatively simple thing to do, but then I'm not someone who actually drafts the legislation, so maybe it's more complicated than we think. Maybe there's lobbying going on behind the scenes that we don't know about that's causing the problem, but that's an odd one. You know, I guess one that's not really a sales tax issue, but sales tax is going to be the delivery mechanism, and that's the grocery rebate. There was a lot made to do about this grocery rebate, so it's going to be delivered via the GST credit. So it's a personal income tax measure. I guess what's interesting is that, you know, they made this big announcement about how they're going to help people with groceries, but it seems to be a one-time adjustment in the month of January. And that almost leads you to the conclusion that, hey, inflation's over. And I don't think that's the case. I think it's ongoing. So what are we going to do to support people, particularly low-income people, in terms of paying for groceries going forward? I don't see anything there. There's a one-time boost, $153 per adult. That's probably one grocery purchase, and it's gone right there. So that was kind of interesting.
It was.
Maybe a little bit disappointing.
Yeah, I was going to say, that was a change that made all the headlines as a grocery rebate, even though it's not really a grocery rebate per se. I mean, there's no requirement to buy groceries. And it's actually more of a personal income tax thing, even though they're running it through the GST personal income tax credit. So kind of interesting how they frame that. But I imagine they chose the GST credit because it was the easiest way to get the funding to those who need it.
Definitely.
Really good. Really interesting observation there.
And then one last item. Again, this is an income tax item, so I guess we can kind of use it to lead into income tax comments. But they made a change to the definition of credit unions in the Income Tax Act. And people are probably saying, well, okay, so what's that got to do with sales tax? Well, interestingly enough, the Excise Tax Act or the GST-HST legislation uses the same definition for sales tax purposes. So there's where we get the impact. The change that they're proposing is that there's a test to determine whether you're a credit union. And one of the tests relied on revenue. They're going to eliminate that revenue test. And the impact of that is that now transactions, supplies between credit unions and credit union centrals and other credit unions are now going to be exempt because of that revenue test. the reality was those transactions were often taxable, and that was not really the expected situation that everyone felt was needed to be there. So the change there is I think we're going to see what are kind of like intercompany transactions between credit unions be exempt of tax, which is kind of what we would expect in that situation. So I think that was an interesting one as well, even though it really wasn't a sales tax change per se.
Yeah, I mean, great summary, Jeff, and thank you for the segue to income tax, because that's definitely where we're headed now. Brian, obviously, you know, you're a scientific research and experimental, easy for me to say, development tax credit expert. You know, and we had seen comments in prior years about the government, you know, reviewing that program and really reviewing overall the tax treatment for intellectual property. But I found this year's budget, they were a little bit quiet on it. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think they first announced they were going to review the SR&ED program to make sure it was relevant and effective, and that they were considering a patent box. That was two budgets ago. Last budget, they just refreshed the same old, same old. We were aware that they'd started kind of the review process of the program and had reached out to certain stakeholders this year. So basically this year's announcement was, yeah, we've started the review. We'll continue to reach out to stakeholders, and we're still considering a patent box. So the concern there, what they want to address there, I mean, there has been a shift from the so-called entitlement-based programs like SR&ED, where if you have an eligible project, you get funding, and they want to direct more of the money toward certain programs. So they want to make sure that they're spending the money in the right spot for the SR&ED program. We're not expecting huge changes to the benefit there. They had a major reform a number of years ago in the early 10s. We're not expecting anything like that again. In fact, the most recent change was to make it more generous for CCPCs, for the smaller Canadian controlled private companies. So we're not expecting anything radical there. But the patent box, which would take certain intellectual property income and put it on a different line item to give it a preferred tax rate, that's something that's in the UK and a few other jurisdictions. What they're trying to combat there is funding projects to develop IP, then the commercialization of the IP moves offshore where it's more tax-friendly jurisdiction. So they want to keep that commercialization in Canada for the jobs, for the economy, for all the benefits it would bring. So what they're looking into is a patent box regime that would reduce the tax rate on that income. And it's interesting. I did work directly for Department of Finance as a consultant a long time ago. We're looking in the mid-20-aughts, and they were looking at various jurisdictions globally. And one of their questions back then was, who's using a patent box and what are the details of it and how effective has it been? So they've been looking at this for a long time. It'd be interesting to see how they implement that, if it is tied in some way to SR&ED projects or if it's IP in general. That'll be interesting to see if they implement something and then how it relates to development projects.
Yeah, I mean, those all sound like great ideas. It's just interesting how long it's taking to sort of get to something more formal and see what the new rules, if there are going to be any, you know, what they might look like. So certainly very interesting. Now, you're also an income tax expert. What else did you see from an income tax perspective in this year's budget?
I'm also a SR&ED guy, which is technology. What did stand out to me was the clean technology tax incentives, not necessarily the direct funding, but tax credits. I mean, you have clean hydrogen investment tax credit up to 40% based on carbon intensity, clean technology investment tax credit up to 30%, clean electricity investment tax credit 15%, clean technology manufacturing investment tax credit up to 30%. And then they have some small revisions to the carbon capture utilization and storage investment tax credit to expand it a little bit for refurbishments and a couple of other things. So that was an area that caught my eye.
It's definitely a trend. I mean, there's a lot of clean tech tax credits all kind of listed in the budget documents
there. As Jeff's going to get into in a bit, I mean, lots of direct funding in that area too. So, I mean, it was seemed to be a big focus of the budget. And there are a few things about these credits that I found interesting. I mean, this isn't the right form to go into all the details of them, but one of the things was all of these credits are fully refundable. So whether a company's in a tax-paying position or not, they're going to get a refund of any unused credit as a cash refund. So it'll first offset taxes, but then, you know, cash back, which is fantastic. Another feature of these, they interrelate them in that you only get to claim one of this family of tax credits. So what it behooves a taxpayer to pick the one that's going to be the most advantageous. I mean, the carbon capture credit is up to 60% for direct air capture and 50% for other projects and a lower rate for transportation use and storage. Then you got the hydrogen 40% and clean technology, the two clean tech credits up to 30%. So there's a definite hierarchy there. So you're going to want to fit your project, your purchases into the most advantageous bucket because you only get to claim one of them. And that's the first thing.
That's a really good point because I think there's some projects and some spends out there that would qualify for more than one of these credits. So
yeah,
some analysis is required, right? You got to look at what the eligible expenditures are and see which one would be the most beneficial. Because I think a lot of the credits do specifically say you can't double up, right? It's one or the other.
And these ones in particular, they can't double up. I mean, theoretically, if you had development time into an internal project, you could potentially claim for SRED and stack it up with maybe on the asset itself for the investment tax credit. And there'd be some optimization to do there. But within this group of clean tech credits, there's no stacking. You pick one and that's what you get. But I mean, some of them are pretty generous. So it's not necessarily a hardship to take up a 60% carbon capture credit, right?
No, it doesn't sound like it.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
The other thing was they all seem to have labor requirements with respect to prevailing wage rates and apprenticeship positions. So they want to be developing the labor force and making sure that people are being paid accordingly. And the labor requirement, if it's not met, it doesn't kill your eligibility. What it's doing is it's grinding it by on average 10% of the credit rate is eroded if you don't meet those labor requirements. There will be labor requirements published for the carbon capture credit. That's just TBD, but the other ones are out there now.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting concept kind of introduced to these investment tax credits. And I think for a lot of them, that's coming into effect for labor expenditures this October. So very, very interesting approach being taken there. You know, you mentioned that you can't double up on some of these tax credits, but what you can do is if you're eligible for a tax credit, you can still potentially access government funding. So let's bring in Jeff number two, Jeff Dumart. What did you see in the budget, you know, from a government funding perspective?
Yeah, I mean, we spoke to it already before, but a lot of these initiatives are going towards clean technology adoptions, benefits to the environment. So I'd say there's about four or five different programs that are focusing on this. A lot of the programs are existing programs. However, the focus has been on shifting those programs towards clean technology initiatives. So an example is the Strategic Innovation Fund. It's been around for about 6 years now. It's really focusing on large scale expansion related projects, at least $20 million spends. But the shift here is towards the clean technologies. So they've devoted $500 million over the next 10 years on this program. In addition to that, they have reallocated $1.5 billion of existing resources to focus on these projects related to the clean technologies. Furthermore, they estimated about $3 billion will be funded through Natural Resources Canada over the next 13 years for projects to expand Canada's clean energy grid. Again, Natural Resources Canada, they're going to devote another $370 million approximately over the next 3 years, not necessarily for clean technologies, but for the forestry sector to enable innovation, growth, and create jobs. So a little bit different from the clean tech side of things. Going back to the clean sector again, clean technology again, Critical Mineral Infrastructure Fund has received another $1.5 billion for developing energy and transportation related projects that are going to unlock priority mineral deposits. So likely we're seeing that as a result of these electrical vehicles and clean driving transportation. steering a little bit away from the clean side of things, the agricultural side. So agricultural is one of Canada's top sectors for productivity output, and it's a key economic driver. So the federal government has, they realized that, and they delegated about $500 million through a program previously called the Canadian Agricultural Partnership Program. They're keeping it the same name, however, they've calling it the Sustainability Canadian Agricultural Program. So again, focusing on that clean technology side of things.
I guess they're keeping consistent with the theme, Jeff, with yeah, that name.
Exactly. So that program itself has received over will receive $500 million over the next 5 years. It is federally funded program, but it will be launched over each province. So each province will have variations of that particular program. For example, in Ontario, they just announced one that will be launching the end of April. Again, the focus is on clean energy related projects. Stepping away a little bit from the clean side of things, there are some programs that did receive top-ups. So an example of this is the Can Export program. So this is a federal program that is helping companies expand their international sales. So it'll cover 50% of marketing related costs up to $50,000 to grow your international sales. And then one other one, hiring grant. So they do realize there's a shortage for a lot of jobs out there. And as such, they have released a few different hiring programs. For the time being, the focus is, again, on that clean energy, clean environmental related roles. But I do expect to see some other programs open up in the coming weeks or months that don't have that direct focus.
Yeah, with government funding announced in budgets, it always seems the details follow, especially if it's a new program. This year, did the government stay with sort of the tried and true? Like, is it mostly top up and additional funding for existing programs? Or are there some brand new programs on the horizon?
Yeah, for the most part, it has been on existing programs. But typically when the budget gets released, they will announce new programs, generally about 2-3 months after the fact. The full details of those programs will get released. So probably sometime later this spring or summer, we'll see some new programs opening up.
Okay. I know it would be impossible to cover them all in the podcast today. Where can somebody go if they want to find out more information about some of the programs that were announced?
Yeah, great point. So if you go to our website, mentorworks.ca, great website there that you can navigate through the various programs. You can sort by industry, sort by province, and it'll generate a whole list of programs that you might be applicable for.
Okay, and if somebody has further questions, maybe after searching that up, how can they contact you, or what's the best way to get in touch with MentorWorks?
Exactly. Yeah, good point. So you can, again, on our website, we have a contact form there based on your legend, but based on your company, you can fill out a quick questionnaire to ensure you qualify for the different programs. And the majority of the programs is focusing on companies that are established. So if you've been in business for at least 2 to 3 years, you're financially stable, you have X amount of employees. But there are also some opportunities for the smaller startup companies as well. But yeah, reach out to our website. If you want to reach out to myself directly, I'm happy to provide a complimentary one-on-one meeting. It's jeff.dumert@ryan.com.
Okay, that sounds good. I guess we have the same issue with all of the tax changes that were announced, even though some of those tax changes were actually previously announced in last year's budget or even the year before, and certainly in the most recent fall economic statement. So a lot of what we were seeing was kind of the details on what was previously announced. While we can't cover it all, there were some other interesting changes, particularly for large public corporations. For example, eliminating the deduction for dividends received by financial institutions on what would be considered portfolio shares. There's also a 2% tax on the way for the net value of any share repurchases greater than $1 million. Both of those are set to take effect in 2024. And also several proposed measures to tighten up the GAR, which is the General Anti-Avoidance Rule, including extending the reassessment period by 3 years. So lots of other interesting changes. As I said, we can't cover them all, but you can find more information on those and other changes that were announced on our website at ryan.com/Canada under News and Insights. And if you still have questions at that point, you should call Jeff Shaw's group. Jeff, how can our clients find out more about these tax changes?
Yeah, I've got a team ready to take questions on sales tax issues and content in in the budgets. They can reach us by email if that's your preferred way to communicate at taxdirect@ryan.com, and we'll take that and get back to you. The other way is you can reach us by phone at 1-800-667-1600. And again, someone on the same team will pick up that call and give you assistance or more information on the budget.
Jeff, number one, Jeff, number two, and Brian, thank you all for your insights today on the 2023 federal budget. It's very much appreciated.
Thank you, Jim.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, Jim.
That concludes this episode of Ryan Talks Tax. Please let us know what you think about the podcast. You can send your questions, comments, or suggestions to events@ryan.com. Thanks for listening.